If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
How did the Titans do on day one of NFL free agency? We're going to grade their haul, plus tell you why this spending spree is different from most free agent spending sprees. But where do the Titans stand? How much cap space do they have left? And who might they sign next? We're covering all that right now on the Music City Audible Live. Let's get to it. Whoopsie-daisy. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast live, recapping sort of the Titans' day one of NFL free agency, looking ahead as day two is officially underway. Where might the Titans go next? How do they do on day one? Yeah, they had a ton of signings. They spent a ton of money. But it's different than when most teams go on a free agency spending spree. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey. And joining me, as always, the managing editor of Titan Size, the publisher for NFL Draft on SI, my co-host, Justin Mello. How you doing today, Justin?
I'm doing well, doing well. Crazy first day in the books for the Tennessee Titans. I kind of wish I asked you yesterday, how many signings do you expect the Titans to make today? I don't know what you would have said, but I bet you wouldn't have said 9, right? I don't know that either of us would have said 9. Titans get, you know, super aggressive in free agency, some big money deals, some depth deals, some a backup reserve type deals, but really, really interesting first day. 9 signings again. I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Yeah, should we recap everyone the Titans signed on day one? I also want to talk about, we have a better, clearer picture of what the salary cap looks like, so we'll talk about how much space the Titans still have. They obviously haven't cut anyone that we expect them to cut, so they can create even more space. They're currently second in the NFL in terms of money spent this offseason. The Raiders top the list. The Titans are right behind them at number 2. They signed, should we just do it like in order? They signed Daniel Bellinger, Mitch Trubisky, Wandale Robinson, John Franklin Myers, Cordale Flott, help Alante me out.
Alante Taylor. Austin Schlottman.
Cordell Volson. Josh Williams. And they re-signed Morgan Cox, long snapper. Don't forget about that one. And all in all, they spent, what, $280 million or something in that range they spent? $270.7, but we don't still know Mitch Trubisky's contract number or what the deal is there. How would you grade this haul, Justin? I mean, they added a number of starters. You mentioned they added a few reserve pieces. We're not entirely sure what the plan is on the interior of the offensive line because maybe they signed 2 starters. If they did, they signed 2 subpar starters that I wouldn't feel good about. But overall grade for what they did on day one of free agency, what would you give it?
I would give it a B, probably. I think I wasn't planning on saying this so early, but I think the harsh reality is they were so bad, right? The roster was so bad. It got better. It's certainly not. I feel like it's the roster of a 6-win football team right now, a 7-win football team, which guess what? It's a lot better than a 3-win football team, right? And listen, you hit on some of your draft picks, you do one or two other things in free agency, you get better. That could quickly, you know, change to a, you know, 8, 9, 10-win football team. But as of now, I think they raised the floor of the roster, right? Who had the, interestingly enough, of course, a lot of the focus on the Wandale Robinson deal, but correct me if I'm wrong, the highest AAV is actually John Franklin Myers, right? At what, like 21.5, 22 million per year, give or 3 years, 63 million, I think it was.
21 million.
21 million per year. And then Alante Taylor, I think, is second in terms of AAV, just a hair under 20 at 3 years. I initially saw it at 3 years, 60 million, but I think it officially came in at 3 years, 58.
Correct.
So a hair under 20 million. And then you got Robinson at 4 years, 70.
I believe it was the number. So. Yep, that's right.
Good question here from, 4 years, 70 million. So third highest AAV for Robinson. It felt like that deal got the most focus, but interesting that's not in the top two. Flowers Powers, what does a B stand for? Some of us did not grow up in that system. It's like the second highest grade. I don't know. Like, did you grow up out of 10? What did you grow up? I don't know what they do in Mexico, I believe Flowers Powers is in, if I recall correctly. I don't know what the Mexican system is. But it's like a pretty good grade, but not the absolute best you can get. I think that's the best way I can describe it.
It's like an 8.2 out of 10. Like if you got an 82 out of 100 on a test, you would have gotten a B. That might be B minus territory, but you have A minus. I mean, A plus maybe, but A minus, B plus B, B minus, C plus C, C minus F. Some people use Ds. My schooling system went straight from C to F. Anyway, yeah, I think I would give them like a B to a B plus because they attacked areas of need on the roster. They are better positioned than they were to go into the draft and draft best player available. Although I do think, you know, the corners they signed, right? They signed three corners. That could be your starting trio and Marcus Harris as depth. Or you could draft somebody still highly in the draft that doesn't have to play right away that you can develop into a starter so that 2 years down the line when you cut these guys, that fourth round pick cornerback you draft is ready to become a full-time starter, which is sort of what the Chiefs did all those years when Mike Borgonzi was there, is they're finding these corners mid to late rounds of the draft. Obviously, Trent McDuffie was a first rounder, but the rest of them mid to late rounds of the draft, and they develop into guys, and the Titans signed one of those guys, Josh Williams, a 2-year, $10 million deal. So very interesting. You see some stuff?
He said three corners. Who? Yeah, they signed Josh Williams last night. If you're not familiar, that's why you join this show. In case you missed things, we got you up to speed. Can I talk a little about the corners, if you don't mind?
Yeah, why not?
I do think they did a really good job raising the floor of that room, right? Like the bottom line is they had one rosterable corner on the roster, right? One rosterable corner on the team. And that is dire. Right. Like, I mean, to go into any portion of the offseason with one rosterable player at a position, that is in dire strength. So they go out and they get Alante Taylor and Cordell Flott, starting caliber players, right? Not high end guys, but starting caliber players, something that this room did not have. I like Flott as well. He's big. He's pretty long, a little slender, but no doubt about it that he could play on the outside, could play the boundary, right? And they did not have a single guy that could play out there heading into the market. So Alante Taylor, also a good football player, I think outside, inside versatility. Yeah, we're about to give you the analysis on the third guy as well. Inside, outside versatility on Alante Taylor, definitely a starting caliber player. Now, I'm being honest, none of these guys are superstars by any stretch of the imagination, but I think they're, you know, starting caliber, mid-tier starting caliber players. The third being Josh Williams from the Chiefs, a fourth round pick, I believe in 2022, when Mike Borgonzi was the assistant general manager in Kansas City, might've played a big role in drafting. And remember, assistant GMs tend to have more say over day three picks, I think, than anything else. So that's notable to me. Only 12 career starts for Williams. He's a backup with some experience. He's also really big. He's like, well, I think 6'3"-ish, close to 200 pounds, almost 33-inch arms. So he obviously going to play on the outside for them. I don't know if he's their starter, right? I think that's – I love asking these sort of philosophical questions. The way I look at the corner room right now, they've got two options, right? It's Josh Williams and Flott outside with Alante Taylor at the nickel, which might be his best position. Or it's Flott and Taylor outside with Marcus Harris at the nickel. And Williams is like the new Daryl Baker Jr., right? Like he's the first guy off the bench. I also think it's possible that going back to my first scenario, if it's, you know, Taylor on the at the nickel with Flott outside, maybe Williams and Harris compete for the other starting spot outside. Because although my evaluation indicates that Harris is a nickel, I wouldn't totally give up on him potentially playing outside. But I'm really curious. The only thing I'm certain of is in three corner sets, Flott and Taylor are definitely starters. That third spot, is it Williams or Harris, and where do they line up? We don't know yet.
Yeah, I would guess that those three guys they signed today play the majority of the snaps at cornerback when everyone's healthy. Yesterday, played the majority of the snaps when everyone's healthy at cornerback. We all like Marcus Harris, but I mean, the fact of the matter is they signed three corners and maybe they'll compete. And Josh Williams' deal isn't huge, 2 years up to $10 million. But it's also, I mean, that's a lot of money to pay a backup because Daryl Baker Jr. was in-house and they could have had him for like $4 million this year if they just wanted, you know, solid depth backup. I feel like you go sign Josh Williams because you see him as potentially more than that. But all of that will shake itself out and sort itself out and shake out. TBD, I think they that was the biggest need. We said it multiple times. We did our mock off season. We signed two corners. We signed, what, Jalen Watson and Alante Taylor? I think they go get Cordell Flott and Alante Taylor in real life. They had a third corner in Josh Williams. I didn't expect them to sign three guys. I thought maybe they'd bring back somebody like Daryl Baker. But that is an aggressive move to shore up what was your weakest, not just weakest position, but barest position. Like, there was nobody left on the roster. L'Jarius Sneed is still left on the roster, and I want to hit this quickly because it was posed in the chat. Here's what's going on with L'Jarius Sneed. First of all, the rush to cut him is March 16th is basically the deadline where he gets some more money guaranteed for this year. It's not a ton more, but it's like $5 to $7 million more guaranteed for 2026. The issue is they cannot cut him until he passes a physical because he has another $7.5 million guaranteed for injury. So if they were to cut him and he couldn't pass a physical, they would owe him that money and it would count towards their cap hit this year. So they're trying to like wait as long as they can, give Sneed that physical at the end of the day on March 15th, hope that he passes it, and then cut him, hopefully at no penalty or no further cap problems caused by one of the worst contracts the Titans have signed in a long time. The fact that he has that injury guarantee even is crazy for when you traded for a guy that you knew had a chronic knee issue. Like, what was that?
Most guys have some sort of injury guarantees built in, though, right? Yeah, a guy of that stature who was a $76 million player was going to always get a pretty good chunk of money. Maybe let's talk a little about what else they did. Let's go to the receiver and tight end, maybe. I know we've talked a lot about Wandell Robinson sort of, you know, leading up to free agency, but it's a 4-year, $70 million deal with a maximum value of 78. He could earn up to 78 through incentives. One of the worst kept secrets. I think we all knew Brian Daboll wanted this guy. I can't believe how many ex-Brian Daboll guys they signed, by the way. Like, they clearly... doesn't he feel like a bit more than an offensive coordinator? Like, it really feels like he's almost co-head coach, helping pull the strings on a lot of what they did in free agency. So they bring in Wandell Robinson, as we anticipated. A lot of talk about the contract, but when you break it down, $38 million guaranteed. to me, that kind of says it's a 2-year contract and then we'll see. An easy rule of thumb, even if you don't fully understand contracts, $38 million guaranteed. So over 2 years, that's an average of $17 million. That more or less works out to the average per year that they gave him. You can get out of it after that. That's kind of maybe a cheat code to look at it that way. You're going to pay him about $17, $18 million a year. All he's guaranteed is 2 years of that. And then after that, you've got an out. You've got a huge out after the third year. In fact, I'd almost guarantee he doesn't play out the fourth year. Because you see, if you've seen the structure of the contract, there's so much savings with so little dead left behind after the third year. Probably not playing the fourth year. If it doesn't go well, I would say he doesn't even get the third year. But you hope it goes well because, you know, they need to raise the floor of this wide receiver room. He had 90 catches last year, 1,000 yards. He knows the system really well. I think he's going to be super, super reliable for Cam Ward, especially in the short to intermediate areas, which I think Cam Ward, you know, has to do a better job taking what the defense gives him in those spots. Well, guess what? They're going to give him a lot when it comes to Robinson because he really creates a lot of separation in those short to intermediate areas, and he's also a good manufactured touch guy closer to the line of scrimmage. So hopefully this helps Cam Ward play a, you know, safer, more reliable version of his game occasionally. But I think it's, you know, nice player to have. You're on mute.
Good catch. I've said it how many times, Justin, that Wandale Robinson was my number one target for the Titans going into free agency. I just think he does so much of what this offense was missing in terms of that short area quickness, ability to create separation, provide that underneath option to where, you know, if the first read's down the field and it's not there, you don't have to cycle through four other reads. You know Wandale's open underneath. So a huge fan of that signing. That was probably the one that we expected the most, but also one that's going to be the most impactful on offense. And then the other signing that we expected the most was John Franklin Myers, who we talked about this yesterday, but I think that is the most impactful signing out of all of them. Obviously, the corners raises the floor, but we talked about it. None of those guys are true high-end corners. They're all good, solid players. Nobody's going out there and shutting down Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. Not that many corners in the league are doing that anyway, but these guys certainly probably are not. It's going to be a team defense effort. And John Franklin Myers helps them because he's going to be pushing that pocket next to Jeffrey Simmons, having two guys who rank in the top four of defensive tackle pressure rate over the last two seasons. That gives the Titans, I will say this definitively, the top pair of defensive tackles, especially when it comes to pass rush defensive tackles, in the entire NFL. That is a huge, huge strength of your defense now. And I said this yesterday, but I'll say it again for anyone who missed that stream. It makes your edge position less important. You don't need an edge that can pressure the quarterback on every single snap, or somebody that's going to threaten to do so, or somebody that's going to command a double team on every snap. Jermaine Johnson is a solid edge on one side. We think they probably still need a starter on the other side. I don't think a training camp competition between Femi Oladejo and Jalen Harrell is going to yield very exciting results. So go sign one more edge or draft somebody either at number 4 overall or number 35 overall sometime on, you know, the first 2 days of the draft, depending on how, if they move from those picks or whatever. Get another body in the building there to start opposite Jermaine Johnson. But I just think John Franklin Myers is going to provide so many big-time defensive plays, ending drives, forcing sacks, interceptions, turnovers. Huge signing there. I give the John Franklin Myers signing an A+. It's like my number one signing in terms of grade. Wandale, most exciting because offense is more exciting. But John Franklin Myers, love it so much. Him next to Simmons. The only thing I'm sad about is he has to change his number.
Yeah, he was number 98. I'm in full agreement. I wish I had a different opinion than you, but it's by far my favorite signing. I'm head over heels over the John Franklin Myers edition. Elite pass rusher, I think, from the inside, can defend the run. I think is flexible enough to kick out outside on occasion. If we've seen Jeffrey Simmons do it, I promise you John Franklin Myers can do it as well. So I'm a big, big fan of the signing. I agree. Maybe not an A+, but definitely an A at the very least for me. We've had a lot of good questions flying in. Like, I don't want to make this just a questions pod because I do have some questions fun, ironically, I've got my own questions I want to ask about the team and what the plan is moving forward. I really want to talk about the interior and I want to of the offensive line, that is, and I want to have the number four overall pick debate, because there was a good question there, and I know you want to get to it too. Do you want to start getting into some of these questions, or do you want to round off some of the other names? I think we talked enough about Mitch Trubisky and Daniel Bellinger.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate on Bellinger that I don't think it's an overpay. The first year cap hit came in just over $5 million a year, and when you see Charlie Kohler go sign with the Chargers for basically the same contract and the importance of having a tight end too that can block, and I'll just address a comment that came in very early on here, which was, love the moves except for letting Chigakonkwo go. It's like, look, Chigakonkwo gave you some nice moments, but I mean, I'm not losing sleep over letting Chigakonkwo go. He cannot. He was literally, we did this when we did the Should the Titans Resign Chigakonkwo. Out of qualified players, players with enough snaps at tight end, the worst run blocking tight end in the entire NFL. Not near the bottom, not one of the worst. The worst, the lowest graded PFF run blocking grade of all tight ends in the league.
I don't have a problem with it, but I do have some slightly different opinions than you, I think. Is Chig a better player than Daniel Bellinger? Yes, I think he is. I do think the Titans slightly did overpay for Bellinger. I'm not losing a ton of sleep over it, because when the cap is $320 million, whatever the hell, $305 million, giving a guy $8 million when the first year cap hits like $5 million, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. Yeah, I think they slightly overpaid. I think Charlie Kohler is a better player, by the way.
He's a better
Bellinger,
blocker.
Better
Bellinger's
blocker,
probably
sure.
A better receiver.
Probably, but he's a career high of 286 passing yards. I don't think anyone's writing anything home about his pass catching ability, Bellinger. But I will say, like, yes, Chig is a better player. I think they slightly overpaid, but kind of think of it exactly. I think it's more a reimagining of the room, right? Like being able to get more creative, get more multiple with your personnel. Maybe not tip your hand when guys are the field, are on the field. So for me, it might make the overall tight end room better just by being different. But I'm not going to sit here and say he's a better player than Chig. Obviously, they do different things and excel in different areas. But I don't think anyone's going to be like, you know, this guy's unless he's one of the best blocking tight ends we've ever seen, I don't think he's probably going to blow this fan base away. He's just going to help them do some things a little bit different.
Yeah, I think it's a role that they needed to fill. Somebody who can be a blocker first, but still threaten with the ball in his hands, as you saw him do on that infamous play where Jackson Dart flips the ball ahead like 1 yard at the Giants' 30-yard line or the opponent's 30-yard line and runs all the way 30 yards to the end zone. Okay, Justin, we're going to take a quick break for our audio listeners here, but I do, before we get into the stuff you were talking about, I have a quick rant to unveil or deliver, but we'll be right back. Welcome back to the audio audience. Here's the rant, Justin. This is not your typical free agent spending spree. I just got to get this off my chest. You see teams do this every year. The most infamous one, it was like the Jacksonville Jaguars, the year they gave Christian Kirk $18 million a year and signed a whole bunch of other guys and spent like $250 million in free agency when the cap was $100 million lower than it is today. And every year, it's who is the biggest winner of free agency, right? And the biggest winner of free agency rarely has any success when the actual season comes around. It was the Titans 2 years ago when they traded for Snead, signed him to a big extension, signed Calvin Ridley, signed Lloyd Cushenberry, and all the other guys that they signed that offseason.
Tony Pollard, Cheeto Awuzie. Yeah.
And the linebacker that they traded, Kenneth Murray, all those guys, right? The Titans were the big free agency winners, right? And then they were 3-14, terrible team. Last year, the Patriots and the Seahawks kind of flipped the script. I think the Patriots were, I think they were both top five in free agent spending last year. I'm pretty sure the Patriots were number one. Obviously, they meet in the Super Bowl, different situation there. The Seahawks had drafted really well leading up to those final pieces that they added.
I don't want to cut you off, but I do think people blow out of proportion how much the Seahawks spent.
Yeah. The Seahawks, whatever. But the Patriots were the exception to the rule. Everyone was like, this doesn't usually happen. Let's also consider the Patriots had a second-year quarterback primed to break out under a very experienced, talented offensive coordinator in Josh McDaniels, under a coach that knows how to build a culture and win games when he does have a talent advantage in Mike Vrabel. And, they had played an extremely soft schedule, and their playoff run couldn't have been easier, and their defense really stepped up, and the quarterbacks that they faced every round of the playoffs completely melted down until they got to the Super Bowl. So a lot of like caveats attached to the Patriots' success after being that big free agent spending team. The point is, usually when you spend the most, you don't win the most, and you barely even see those spendings reflected in the wins on the field. But the Titans are different. And no, this is not the Arrested Development meme. It never worked for them, but maybe it'll work for us. This is different because of the players the Titans signed. Mike Borgonzi has preached it. We want to be a draft and develop team. This free agency is the closest you can get to draft and develop free agency. Like, the Titans signed a bunch of guys that Robert Saleh and Brian Daboll drafted and developed, right? This is not free agent wide receiver has a massive year before free agency and other team comes in and swoops in and pays Kenny Golladay $25 million a year, hoping that he can do what he just did for his previous team under a different coaching staff in a totally different system in a totally different culture and environment, and hope that he can keep doing that for us now that he's making a ton of money. This isn't Albert Haynesworth leaving the Titans and signing a freaking seven-year deal with Washington, or was it Washington? Wherever he went after he left Tennessee. This is so different because you're not projecting guys that you don't actually know that well. You don't actually know how they are in the building, how they affect your locker room and your culture, because you just watched them on tape play for another coach and another team. Almost everybody the Titans signed on Monday are guys that were drafted and developed by the Titans' current coaching staff. They are like an acceleration on the draft and develop rebuild process. It's such a unique situation. The only guys that didn't know the Titans before, the Titans coaching staff before signing, were Cordell Volson, I think, the Browns guard that they signed, and Alante Taylor. Yes. And Alante Taylor was drafted by Dave Ziegler in New Orleans, right? Wow. So there was a, he was part of the team that drafted him.
I think he was in the front office somewhere.
He knew him in New Orleans, is my point. Nobody the Titans signed, especially at the starter level, is coming in to a coaching staff that does that watch them play on tape and thinks they're exciting, good players, but doesn't actually know how to coach them and how to work them into their system. Everybody the Titans signed, it's like they were drafted and developed and just given contract extensions. It's a totally unique free agent spending spree, and it's why I have faith. You know, this is also the like fan cope angle to it, but it's why I have faith that these moves could really work out the way the Titans envision them working out.
Well, I think to summarize, they had to raise the floor of this football team. I'm seeing a lot of that in the chat, and I agree. Like, they still have a lot of holes. So think about how bad it was that they have all these holes we're going to talk about after signing 9 players yesterday, right? Like, we get it. Like, they couldn't just draft and develop because that would take 5 years and you're going to get fired before that, because way too many holes on this team. They've certainly raised the floor. This was a 3-win football team, guys. In back-to-back years, a 3-win football team. Progress is probably slow. I didn't mean it as a negative when I said they've raised the floor to this is the floor of this team should now be like a 6-win team or a 7-win team. It takes time to go from 3 to 6, 7 wins. It's typically, especially when you've been a 3-win team in back-to-back years. So, and I agree with you that bringing in guys that the coaching staff knows, that the general manager knows, probably the best way to maximize the value of those signings. Hopefully it gets rid of the acclimation period, right? They know the offenses, they know the defenses, they know the coaches. So for me, I agree that it's, you know, I saw a lot of people making jokes about, you know, Daboll and Saleh bringing in a bunch of guys that got them fired. Well, they didn't bring in Woody Johnson, right? And they didn't bring in Daniel Jones, and they didn't bring in Aaron Rodgers. There's a lot that goes into those firings. And to handpick just a couple of players that they feel good about, that they feel like they could have won with if the other circumstances were better, that's what they did here. Maybe I could have won with Daniel Bellinger if I had Cam Ward as my quarterback, right? Maybe I could have won with John Franklin Myers if I also had a Jeffrey Simmons next to him, et cetera, right? Like, I think that's what the plan was, and I don't have any issues with it. I don't know if we're about halfway through this or not, but I do want to get to a lot of the questions, and I want to talk a lot about what's left and the part that I'm concerned about.
Yeah, let's get to the part that we're concerned about. I would say we're going to be on for like 10 more minutes tops, guys, because we're going to come back when the Titans make another move today, if they make another move today. But let's just quickly get through what's wrong with what they've done in free agency, because This is hope season. Everyone's excited about the new players they're adding, but they definitely missed out on some guys, or specifically some positions that are crucial, especially when you have a second-year quarterback learning a new offense. The center and the right guard spot are open hole question marks right now. Now, the plan at center could be to have Austin Schlottman compete with Jackson Slater and a draft pick for the center spot. Maybe they're still working on Kevin Zeitler at right guard. But those two spots are, I would have rather they spent a lot of money to have the best offensive line in the NFL than paid what they paid. Like, and if the cornerback room is rookies and draft picks and you're getting burned every game, who cares? Like, you're still rebuilding. You can address that next year. You can't send Cam Ward out there on a weekly basis in his second year and just be getting pressure up the interior on every other snap, right? Like, this is a huge thing that they still need to address. And the options to do so have dwindled. Where do you stand on the current center, right guard holes on the roster?
I'm concerned. I'm very concerned. And I think they've got to do something to address at least one of them in free agency. And I think they will. Don't get me wrong. At center, I'm starting to buy into the belief, and we've had some conversations with, you know, friends of ours, people in the know. I'm starting to believe that the plan at center is to have Austin Schlottman compete with Jackson Slater. Now, I don't love that by any stretch of the imagination. I think Schlottman, and like, I'm not pretending like I know the world about him, but the initial vibe I get is maybe he's a slightly better Corey Levin. Like, he's like this backup center who played quite well when he had to start for the Giants last year because of injury. When they lost John Michael Smith to injury, they replaced him with Schlottman. Obviously, Dable likes him. He knows the offense, knows the system. But it's not good enough. Like, look, when they drafted Jackson Slater, we talked about him maybe being a future starter, right? So I don't want to go all the way in the other direction, but I am a little worried. You know, if the plan at center is Schlottman versus Slater, that's not a great one. And a draft pick, because all of a sudden, you know, I wasn't going into this offseason thinking they've got to draft a center early, like second, third, fourth round. But now I kind of am feeling that way after the first day of free agency. But when I look at right guard, I think they have a better chance to address right guard in free agency than they do center, based on what's left. The center market has dwindled big time, like you said. I really think they should still bring back Kevin Zeitler. I'll feel better about the offensive line if it's Zeitler at right guard. Or, you know, we talked about Dylan Parham yesterday. He's still out there. We talked about him being the plan at center. Well, he could also be the plan at right guard, the actual position, or, you know, that he knows how to play, which is guard. So I think they really, really have to do something here, because right now I'm very concerned. Put it this way. We can't be concerned about both spots, right? Like, you have failed if we're concerned about both. If we're concerned about only one, I mean, most offensive lines are concerned about one. But right now, you can't have the gaping hole that you have at right guard and center.
Yeah, and look, like, it's not a diss to Jackson Slater to say that we don't want to roll into the 2026 season with him as a starter, even if we projected him as a future starter. He, like, you need a contingency plan. You need a replacement level guy that can hold down the fort. And maybe that's what Austin Schlottman is while Jackson Slater continues to develop. But I don't know. It's just a risk. You're taking a big risk there with your second year quarterback who needs to be well protected. I want to, as we close this out, Justin, I want to flash up the best available remaining free agents. But I also want to touch on how much cap space the Titans have. So, seven or eight of the 10 contracts have been processed into Spotrac and over the cap and all the sites to tell you how much cap space Titans have. Titans currently have about $50 million. That the John Franklin Myers and Mitch Trubisky deals are not included in that yet, though. And I'm not sure Josh Williams is included in that either. So that's going to be, so if John Franklin Myers is at $21 million a year, the first year cap hit's probably going to be between 12 and 14, depending on the guarantees and the signing bonus and all that. Mitch Trubisky, we don't know what the deal is, which is crazy. Marcus Mariota signed a deal 1 year, $7 million to back up Jaden Daniels in Washington. It can go up to $11 million with playtime incentives. $7 million, like 5 to 8 to 10 million is about the going rate for a backup quarterback. So I'm guessing Trubisky signed somewhere in that range and maybe closer to the 8-9 range because the Titans have a rookie contract quarterback starter. So they're not paying him very much compared to quarterbacks around the NFL. So if you put all those contracts together, Titans about $50 million. I would say there's approximately $20 to $22 million in additional cap hits coming down with Franklin Myers, Trubisky, and Josh Williams. Puts them around $30 million in cap space. Now we know they can clear like $13 million from cutting Calvin Ridley. They can clear a bunch more cutting Jerry Sneed, signing Jeffrey Simmons to an extension, potentially Peter Skoronski to an extension, although I think that will actually be a bigger cap hit than what Skoronski is currently getting paid.
Right.
But if they make all those moves, they still have the resources to go add at least NFL replacement level, starting level center or guard like a Dylan Parham that you mentioned. They have enough to go get a Bobby Okereke or linebacker and a Kevin Zeitler. Like, that's about what I'm expecting. Do I think they're going to sign another high profile edge? Probably not. Do I think they're going to sign a starting caliber safety? Probably not, but maybe that market, you know, there are years. Remember with the year they signed Kenny Vaccaro? There are years where that market moves really slowly. But the Titans are in a good spot with remaining cap space. To have spent the second most money of anybody in the NFL in this free agency cycle and to still be sitting there with about $30 million that could quickly become closer to $60 million, $55, $60 million with a few roster moves, I think that's a pretty good spot to be in right now.
I agree. I think there's plenty of space to make multiple signings in the like Kevin Zeitler, Dylan Parham, Bobby Okereke bucket. So they've got plenty of room to still improve this roster, improve linebacker, improve the interior.
Is this real? It looks copy and pasted from Twitter with the hashtag in there. So I guess this is probably real.
Wow.
Must have just
You know, it's funny. I was going to guess 2 years, $14 million. If it's only 10 and a half, that would be pretty good. If you don't mind, Graver, I want to run through rapid fire some of the questions that I had been starring earlier, because we got some really good ones. We're men of the people. So do yesterday's signings lean you more towards edge or running back at that four spot? I'll try to answer this as quickly as I can. I do think too many Titans fans, maybe Graver, not Graver, jokingly, took yesterday as they're definitely going Jeremiah Love. I think it's still a toss-up. I mean, we just said they on this episode, they don't have enough at edge, not even close, and they didn't do anything in free agency. They've brought in Jermaine Johnson, but there's still a huge hole at edge. It could very well still be Mike Borgonzi's plan at number four overall. Nothing they've done has changed that. Now, I think Jeremiah Love is in play as well, but they still have a huge need at edge. This was a really
Before you move on, quickly, just on that note, it's not just what the Titans did yesterday that make Jeremiah Love at four seem more likely or probable. It's what the other teams did. And Todd McShay tweeted this morning, Todd McShay, draft expert. It's important to note every GM in the league is taking Jeremiah Love on a rookie deal over Kenneth Walker or Travis Etienne on a veteran deal.
For sure.
Not a knock on them. It's just financial sense. Mickey Loomis, the Saints general manager, and Brett Veach, the Chiefs general manager, were well aware that Love wasn't making it to them at picks 7 and 8. So the three teams who are the biggest threat to draft at 7 and 8 is wrong. Isn't it 8 and 9? The Commanders are 7.
I think it's 8 and 9, I think.
Yeah. The Titans at 4, the Giants at 5, and the Commanders at 7 are the three most likely teams to take Jeremiah Love in the top 10. So at 8 and 9 with the Saints and the Chiefs, Love wasn't getting that far.
And one thing McShay didn't mention in that is the Cardinals at 3, who have been linked to Love, they restructured James Conner's contract, decided to keep him, and signed Tyler Algier in free agency and still have a top 65 pick in Trey Benson. They might be ready to give up on, but they've got that's a big investment on. You know, if they had cut Conner, I would have said, it might be Love at 3, or they don't sign Algier. Like, I don't think you're rolling out a trio of Conner, Algier, and Love next year, especially when one of them's drafted at 3. So, really interesting. Good question here from JTurn314, and I think I've got the answer. When it comes to giving a player a physical, what are the stipulations on a player sandbagging and just saying he hurts? Legarius Need, anyone would love to say that and get as much money as they can. The physical is conducted by the team physician, right? So, first of all, let's be honest. His best interest is his employer, and that is the team. And he's also well-trained and known when to look for, you know, a guy maybe not being all the way honest in those situations. So it's the team physician that conducts the physical. And the guy can say he's hurt, but there's got to be some sort of medical evidence there. And the physician will be thorough in looking at that. This is a good one. Wandale Robinson play in two receiver sets. I don't know that I've definitely got the answer to this, but I think so. I think he's definitely not going to be at the X in two receiver sets, but I think he could play the Z in two receiver sets. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I think that he played, I think it was like 43% or something of his snaps outside, 47 maybe, 43 or 47% of his snaps outside last year. Obviously, Malik Nabers' injury changed the Giants' offense quite a bit, and he had to take on a bigger role on the outside, he did a good job. I think he's absolutely a guy that can, 90 catches, over 1,000 yards. He's a guy that can bounce back and forth from the slot to the Z position. You were right to say he's definitely not an X at 5'8", but he's... You don't pay him $17.5 million to come in and not play in most of your two receiver sets. Now, there's going to be looks where he's not on the field. Like, these guys don't play 100% of snaps. They don't even play 90% of snaps, most of these top receivers even. They play 85 or so. So that's probably what I would expect him to play, 70 to 80% of snaps. Good question here from Ritmo. Are we keeping Ridley, or is that a wait until March 16th also, like Snead? I'm of the opinion that they should cut Ridley and use that money to sign Wyatt Teller or Kevin Zeitler and shore up the offensive line. But this is a TBD. They may go through the draft. I mean, if they keep him on the roster on March 16th, I feel like he's on the roster for 2026. So we'll have an answer to this one more soon than anything else.
This is a really the reason I wanted to address this one is because I don't think this is the foregone conclusion that L'Jarius Sneed is. Like, I'm with you. I think they probably should cut him, but I don't feel crazy strong about it either. You know what I mean? Like, I could get behind them keeping him, giving him another chance. Like, I guess I can't quit the thought in my mind that I do think he's a good wide receiver. And last year was incredibly disappointing. It was disappointing before he got hurt. I agree with Iron Grids. Like, I don't know that I'd go 90. I do think he's probably gone. All I'm trying to say is I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. Like, I wouldn't be stunned if they're like, we don't like what else is at wide receiver in free agency. We don't, you know, it's not a strong draft and we're not going receiver at number four. It might be better to just keep this guy. And, you know, we can get behind a room that's Calvin Ridley, Wandale Robinson, and an improved versions of Elik Iomanner and Chimere Dike. So ultimately, do I think Ridley gets cut? Yeah, probably. But I don't think it's for sure.
Anything else you saw in there you wanted to hit? Because if not, we'll close this out by looking at the top guys still available and predict where we think the Titans might go with the rest of free agency. I don't expect them to make 10 more signings, but probably two or three impactful additions could still be had. So let's take a look. This is the top available edge defenders on the market. Will the Titans sign an edge? I mean, we think so. The question is, how much? So I've sorted this by market value. I don't think they're in on Trey Hendrickson. Market value here, $25 million. Trey Hendrickson reportedly wants 30 to 40 and will not budge. Believes that Danielle Hunter at 40 is his ceiling and Jalen Phillips at 30 is his floor. But nobody's making that offer yet. So if he comes down, maybe it gets interesting. I mean, Trey Hendrickson would certainly take this defense from below average to above average in a flash. But still doesn't really fit with the timeline that the Titans are looking for. I'm looking in the lower tier range here. Somebody like Adante Fowler, Hassan Reddick, Michael Dana, who was with the Chiefs and Borgonzi was there. Cam Jordan's probably too old. Leonard Floyd is interesting. Kalavon Chaisson is just not that good. Yeter Gross-Matos, Robert Saleh would know from his time in San Francisco. Is there anyone on this list that stands out as a potential target for the Titans, you think? Charles Omenihu, a guy who I don't think he was in San Francisco when Saleh was there, but he's been in San Francisco.
He was in KC with Borgonzi, wasn't he?
But yeah, he was in KC with Borgonzi. Also, I mean, Hook'em Horns also had a pretty bad domestic incident where he got arrested. It's not so nice.
I'll be honest with you. Outside of Trey Hendrickson, which I don't expect them to do, I don't know for sure that in 2026 any of these guys are going to be better than Jalen Harrell or you know, or a improved Femi. Like, that might sound crazy to say, but like, I don't see any great football players on this list. For the most part, I see declining, aging guys who are probably 5 to 6 sack guys. Jalen Harrell had 5 or 6 sacks last year. I do love Autry. I could always get behind. I don't care if Autry's 73 years old. I can get behind Autry coming back. But for the most part, I don't see anyone here that moves the needle. I don't see anyone that should convince them to definitely sign and not take Edge at number 4. That's my honest assessment.
Right. Nobody you sign here would affect the draft strategy. As we look at linebackers, obviously Dre Greenlaw cut yesterday. Ade Okereke, the top of the market value free agent linebacker, still out there. Caden Ellis, really good blitzing linebacker. Devin Bush, didn't Devin Bush get signed yesterday?
I think he did. Yes, he did get signed. I don't remember where, but I know he got signed.
Yeah, he did. Bobby Wagner is super old, 35. Levante David, 36. I don't think the Titans need to go in that direction, but Okereke, Greenlaw, Leo Chanel, or bust.
Oh, fair. I don't mind you adding the third name in there. Still might expect him to do something. By the way, I love the Devin Lloyd deal. I know, you know, Titans already spent a lot, but I thought it was very reasonable for Carolina. Yeah. $15 million per year. It's rare you get a good deal in free agency. I do think Carolina got one there. Any word on Jihad Ward? I don't think he's going to be back, Manny. Paul Kuharsky recently reported that he wasn't, like, top of mind for them. And I do think they're sort of, you know, I would put him in the pile of when new coaches come in, sometimes good players, you know, or decent players aren't brought back just because they might not be a fit. Like, look at the way I think they replaced Daryl Baker Jr. with Josh Williams. I would say similar kind of thing. You know what I mean? I get the impression they're replacing Jihad Ward. We'll see, but I don't think he's coming back.
Yeah, so these are the interior offensive line guys. Anyone interest you on this list? I mean, besides Zeitler or bust for you here?
Dylan Parham I would put on this list as well, I think is a good player. Yeah, outside of that, I'm not in. I mean, Ethan Potrich is okay. Mm-hmm. Wyatt Teller is old, but he's younger than Zeitler, and I think would be a good solution at right guard as well. So I'd be in on any of those, like Zeitler, Wyatt Teller or Dylan Parham would be good quality signings to fix the right guard position.
Yeah, I'm with you. And those are the three spots. If they make more signings today, those are the three spots that I would guess they happen at. And I wouldn't be shocked if the linebacker happens soon, because I do think they want to upgrade there. One last point I wanted to make. We can answer this question. What about SJD? Any chance? Doesn't seem like it. I mean, he's been hinting on social media that he doesn't expect to be back. He hasn't said it outright, but
they need another D tackle there, though, right? I don't think it's going to be him, but I'm still waiting on it maybe being a guy like Kalia Davis, who I talked about yesterday. I think that they might be in the market more for a player like that.
This is a cool fun fact from Timothy Ferris. Coached against Wyatt Teller in high school. That is very cool. Quickly wanted to hit this question because I saw it a couple times from Ritmo. Could Ridley restructure his contract? I mean, probably not, because you're already looking at a situation where his cap hit is so high and restructures. I mean, he could sign a new contract, some sort of extension that changes his deal, but just a restructure. I mean, you're basically just pushing money down the line that you don't necessarily have. I mean, you're already looking at a $26 million cap hit this year and $27 next year, but your dead cap, why can't I scroll over? Whatever. Sorry. But anyway, no, I mean, you got $5 million of signing bonus left. Like, you could maybe convert some of this roster to signing bonus, but what you do then is you create a huge cap number for 2027, which just, it doesn't really solve the issue at all. It just pushes it to next year. And why do that? You don't need to do that. I don't think that is the way to go. Any last thoughts, Justin?
No, that's going to do it. I do think they'll do something today, whether it's one more signing, two more signings, three more signings. Interesting to see. I think we're planning to hop back on if they do something notable. It depends what time they do it and what they do, obviously. But there's a pretty good chance you guys could be getting a second episode today, an emergency episode. TBD, I've got a couple of interviews this afternoon. I'm interviewing Xavion Thomas, the wide receiver out of LSU, who ran the third fastest 40 at the combine. I got a corner out of North Carolina that was at the combine, and I got a couple more stories to write. So we'll try to figure it all out, but we'll be here if the Titans do something even semi-notable. Kevin Zeitler, Dylan Parham, Bobby Okereke, we'll be here at some point.
I did want to make one more point about Devin Lloyd and Sonny Styles that I forgot about and just remembered. So despite wrapping up here, and this was made on Twitter, I want to say like Marcus Mosher, somebody made this point. Apologies, don't remember. So much stuff flying around yesterday. Devin Lloyd signs for $15 million a year. I mean, he's an all-pro linebacker who was who created so many turnovers on one of the best defenses in football last year in the Jacksonville Jags, at least a top 10 defense, no matter what you thought of them. Good defense. Sonny Styles at number 4 overall is a crazy idea now. Like, I see it now. I see why it's crazy. When you think about the contract that he's signing, that an all-pro linebacker signs compared to what, you know, he can be the best prospect ever. He's still a prospect. It's still a projection. And if the Titans were to draft Sonny Styles, they're paying him $12 million a year. Like, that's crazy.
Why does that impact your opinion on Jeremiah Love? The Super Bowl MVP got the same amount of money. Kenneth Walker, why is it
Kenneth
different?
Walker got... Because Kenneth Walker is not an all-pro top of the market. I get he's a Super Bowl MVP, but he's a two-down player who plays between the 20s. It comes off the field when they get close to the goal line and doesn't impact the receiving game. That's a different player than Jeremiah Love, who does all the things I just said Kenneth Walker doesn't do, as well as run great between the 20s. So
I just don't think he's that different than Devin Lloyd, and the money was pretty similar at their respective positions. That's all I meant.
I think Devin Lloyd is a much better linebacker than Kenneth Walker is running back.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I think it's pretty similar, but that's just wanted to test you on that one here as we got out of here. But
which one? I'm with Justin here. Which one?
John said, get him, Mello. So he knew. So we know who John sides with. Appreciate it, Justin.
There was somebody in here who's been like harping on the fact that the Titans need to draft Jacob Rodriguez at 35. That I'm on board with. I think that is interesting, depending on what they do here the next couple days.
I'm not on board with that.
Jeremiah Love at 4. Jacob Rodriguez at 35.
Running back and at 4. Linebacker at 35. End the stream right now before I walk away. With the current wide receiver room and edge room, no freaking way they can go running back and then linebacker. Ugh.
Chris Brazel would be interesting too. One last point, and this was raised by Austin Stanley of A to Z Sports when we were discussing on Twitter the Titans signing a guy named Wandale, a guy named Cordell, a guy named Cordale, that Jeremiah Love's middle name is, what is it, Darnell? I mean, it fits so perfectly with the random signings that they had. Yeah, Darnell. Darnell, Cordell, Wandale. Get them all the Dales and Dells on this team, and I think we'll be in a pretty good spot. All right. Ready to go? Say goodbye?
Indeed. We'll probably be back later today. We'll see how the main size nine, they deserve, they take a day off. They signed 9 guys yesterday, so don't freak out if they take the day. Appreciate you guys. We'll maybe be back tomorrow. Drop a comment below. Subscribe to the channel. We're chasing, 6,400 subscribers. Closing in on 6,350, I believe it is. So trying to get to those numbers. Appreciate you all. Wait for the stream to end and leave a comment. Like the stream, send it to a friend. Until next time, which might be later today, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.